Welcome back, everybody, to another exciting episode of Cast of the Past, the time-traveling podcast where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. And I'm joined with...
This is the ghost of Tom.
Oh, no. Hold on. Let me get my vacuum cleaner and a picture. A Polaroid picture camera.
Josh, I've come from beyond the grave.
Ooh,
because it's
God.
That it's the most spooky time of the year for Cast of the Past.
It's the most spookiest time of the year.
Yes, everybody. It is Spooky Games Month 2021. And Josh, how are we celebrating this year?
We are celebrating by giving you not one, not two, not three, not four, but five episodes. Five spooky game episodes this October. Because there's five Sundays.
Yeah, when the Romans invented the calendar and set in motion the domino effect that would lead to 2021 having five Sundays, they gave you an extra Cast of the Past episode. So thanks, Caesar.
They knew it was going to happen.
Yep.
They knew it was going to happen.
And what are we starting with this year, Josh?
We are starting with the NES. Oh, I'm sorry. I can't even say that. The Famicom Classic, Sweet Home.
Now, is this about a house made of candy? You know, Halloween trick-or-treat candy?
Yes. This is actually an offshoot of Candyland.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, so Sweet Home has the honors of being the second game that was a Jaeger's Retro Review to become a full-length episode.
Yes, indeed. Jaeger's Retro Review exclusively on our YouTube channel, where Josh goes over classic games in 3 minutes or less. But we are going to give it a much deeper examination today. And I'm really excited because this was my first time playing this title ever.
I mean, it's really hard to get if you don't live in Japan.
Yeah, it's almost like I had to get this through some not very official means.
I don't know what you're talking about. But no, isn't it weird too that you know, the first game that we did that was a Jaeger's Retro Review was Splatterhouse.
Yes.
Right? Wampaku Graffiti.
Yeah.
That didn't come out in America as well.
Until recently, where it came out in the Namco collection.
Correct. Now, Sweet Home, there has been no way of this game coming out in America at all. So this is one of those that it is region locked, and it's very upsetting. But we're going to talk about that in a little bit here. So Sweet Home, we need to know about that nitty gritty.
Ooh, the little minute details that only nerds care about. Yeah, let's get down to it. So Sweet Home.
Let's get down to business.
To sweeten our home. Sweet Home was released on December 15th, 1989, only in Japan. It never came stateside, as Josh detailed. It was developed and published by Capcom, directed by Tokuru Fujiwara, and it is a tie-in to a Japanese horror film that was released a little earlier. This was kind of a hand-in-hand project, which I think was pretty unique for the time. I don't know how many other instances this early in, you know, popular gaming history that they were like, oh, we're making a movie, but let's also specifically get a game based around it out. I guess E.T. is the kind of the other big one, would you say?
Right. So Fujiwara, are you familiar with his work?
I know from research that he actually directed a game that we previously covered.
Let me just go through this list really
do
quick.
Do it. Do it.
All right. Director, Ghosts and Goblins. Director, Bionic Commando. Included with the Mega Man 1, 2, 3, 4 games.
When you say included, does that mean he was just like on the development team?
He was a producer.
Okay.
Advisor on Strider. Director of Sweet Home. Producer of the NES Willow game. Producer of the DuckTales game. Producer of Gargoyle's Quest. Producer of Chippendale's Rescue Rangers. Producer of Darkwing Duck. Advisor on Disney's Aladdin. General producer of Resident Evil, Toomba, Toomba 2.
What is... Hang on, you're going through all these, and I recognize almost all of these. What the F is Toomba?
Toomba is a PlayStation 1 platformer. It's, if you ever saw it, it's like a caveman with pink hair.
Oh, I am familiar with that. Okay.
Yes. He also, original game designer on Mad World for the Wii.
Was that the black and white one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The super violent rated M. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, he has his hands in a lot of games. And this was the fifth or sixth game that he actually directed. And I think he did a pretty decent job.
It's interesting you went through that list. And that is a catalog of almost every Capcom game from that era that people just hold to the highest regard. People in our generation, you know, they love the DuckTales and Chip and Dale games, the early run of Mega Man games, Ghosts and Goblins. We covered it on the show. That's got a very passionate fan base. So, yeah, it's so interesting to see that Fujiwara was, if not directly involved, at least around all of these projects. Kind of the hot take, the Miyamoto of Capcom?
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah.
Early Miyamoto, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so weird, though, that, like, talking about the games that he made, a lot of these have been re-released or put out on newer consoles. You know, we had the Disney collection. We have the Afternoon collection or whatever it was that had the DuckTales games and stuff like that. We got the re-release of Bionic Commando. We got the re-release of Ghosts and Goblins. But we didn't get anything for Sweet Home.
Mm-hmm. I'm really curious as to why, even this many years later, and with the reputation we're going to talk about this game having, Capcom still sits on it. And we'll get into it. But I mentioned that this is tied into a 1989 film of the same name. It's a Japanese horror film directed by Kiyoshi Kurosawa. And no, he's not related to the Kurosawa of Seven Samurai, Rashomon, all that. It's just another Kurosawa. Fujiwara and Kurosawa collaborated during the production of the movie because Fujiwara wanted to have the game expand upon the plot of the film and include a lot of new elements, a lot of elements that, like, the movie couldn't do. But he then was also limited by what the NES could do. Now, Josh, you mentioned for extra credit you wanted to watch the movie adaptation. Or the thing is, I don't really know. This is really difficult to say if... Let's just clarify here. Is the game adapted from the movie, or are they concurrent? What would you say?
I think they're concurrent.
Okay. So I won't use the word adaptation.
I didn't get to watch the movie.
Okay.
But I know a good portion of about the movie.
Okay.
The game goes into a lot more detail than the movie does because there's just a little bit more lore in what you can do with a game over the course of 8 hours than what you can do with a movie over the course of an hour and 40 minutes. So...
True, yeah. True. Okay, excellent. Now, Josh, when did this game first come to your attention? I think I know how it probably did, but tell the audience.
I came in contact with this game about 6-7 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And it was because I was browsing the internet and I was looking for, you know, horror games that were like hidden gems. And this game appeared on every single list that I saw. And I was like, this is interesting. Why is there an NES game on this list? I'm so intrigued by it. And they kept saying it's a survival horror RPG. And I was like, okay, that's weird. I couldn't think of anything all the way up until maybe Parasite Eve that was a horror game and a role-playing game at the same time. I was able to find a American translated version at a retro video game store down the road from me, and I was like all for it. So I picked it up and I played it, and I played it straight through immediately when I got it because I was just so involved and interested in this game that I just couldn't stop playing it, to the point where I had a friend go over to Japan and he was able to get me a copy of Sweet Home for the Famicom when he was visiting Japan. So I want to say thank you. So yeah,
nice. So I'm surprised that you didn't hear of it any sooner than you said. Now, I didn't hear of this until you did Jaeger's Retro Review on it, and I was really intrigued. But the key kind of detail here is that it's well known, and we'll reiterate that this game, probably its biggest legacy is that it inspired the very first Resident Evil game, in that there was an attempt to remake this for the PlayStation, and the remake kind of fell apart, but elements from Sweet Home, the survival horror, the limited inventory, the loading screens involving doors, you know, the mansion, they all helped birth the very first Resident Evil game. And I just kind of always assumed Josh found out about this because of your passion for the Resident Evil franchise.
No, it wasn't until after I played this and I did a little bit more research on it that I was like, oh shit, like I can see it now. Like everyone's saying like, oh yeah, they were trying to remake it and then it ended up being the first Resident Evil game. And I was like, a group of survivors coming from the woods into a mansion that's haunted or has some sort of creatures in there. Oh man, like it's so interesting.
It is. It is. And what's cool about it is that, you know, if you play the two, they are distinct enough, even if they have some of the same bones. Like, Sweet Home doesn't do anything that Resident Evil does. And I don't mean that in a disparaging way. I mean, like, what Sweet Home does is so standalone, unique compared to what Resident Evil does, that it's just really remarkable that they were able to get inspired to make Resident Evil, but not rip off Sweet Home or anything. You know, it still remains its own thing.
I mean, we look at the items, right? The lighter that your one character gets, the medical kit, the lockpick or key, however you want to do it. Like, these are all pieces that were in Resident Evil. Like you said, the loading screens of opening up doors, you know, little traps here and there, like putting stuff in the water to make the blood come up to it, or like all that kind of stuff that, like, from the first game with the plant and stuff like that. Oh my God, there's just so much. It's so good. Like, it's so good. Let's dive in to the story.
Okay, you want to get to
this? Because this story is heavy at times, depending on, you know, what, where you get to, what you're looking at, what's going on. But the story is about five people who show up to kind of record the evidence of this famous painter. They're trying to take pictures of all this famous painter's lost work.
Right. Can I, real quick, can we settle on something real quick? Now, I don't know if this is a translation error or if this is something that's just unclear from American ROM to American ROM. But I know, I guess the official plot description is that the five characters that can make up your party, they are a team of documentary filmmakers. But in the ROM that I play, the translation is that they are a research team. It kind of makes them sound a little bit more scientific. What's kind of funny, I'm not nitpicking, but like, if you go, as Josh said, each of the five main characters have an important standalone item, a key item. You mind if I just run through them real quick, Josh?
Oh, yeah, no, that's fine, yeah.
So we have Akiko, and their key item is a med kit. We have Emmy, and their key item is a key to open doors. We have Asuka, and their key item is a vacuum cleaner. We have Taro, whose main item is like a Polaroid camera, it seems. And finally, Kazuo, who wields a lighter. All these items that they have, only one of them has a quote-unquote camera, and it seems to be a photo camera. So how are they a documentary film crew when one of them has a freaking vacuum cleaner? It doesn't make... It's a little bit like, this is a weird documentary they're making. But anyway, Josh, continue with the adventures of these five.
Once they arrive, they find the first fresco, which is the painting that they're looking at, and they are confronted by a ghost. A spooky ghost. And that ghost is Lady Mamiya, who is Ichiro's wife. Ichiro is the artist. And they have to escape, but they also want to uncover what's happening inside of this crazy mansion, because this mansion is infested by all types of ghouls, ghosts, and hideous monsters.
Some real creepy crawlers around here.
Let's talk about this, though, because the artwork to some of these characters is amazing.
Yes, yes. I appreciated it kind of very early on when you had the spooky doll with the big bloodshot eyes, or the wisps. They have like almost this lion-like face with these firearms coming off of it. I also got a chuckle out of the worms, which just look like big things of lasagna attacking you. what about you, Josh? What are some highlights of enemy art?
I love the pus guys, the ones that had the pimples all over them with like the big machete thing. Just the ghost, like the creatures, the big like ghost things in the game. They're just so creative and just looked amazing. And for it being 1989, right around that time, you had games like The Legend of Zelda, and you look at, you know, games like Final Fantasy or whatnot, and you see the art style to those, and then you see the art style to this, and it's like, how were they able to do something like this with just that limited piece of technology? Like, it's insane. I mean, I applaud them for it. You know, it gave you that creepiness, it gave you that ugliness, and it was very disturbing at times. And there's a scene towards the end of the game where a character who was kind of helping assist you throughout part of the game ends up dying. And he ends up dying by getting his skin melted off. And it looks so good in this game. And I just like, how? how did they do that? Like, how did they get it to look disturbing and like, oh, like creepy? Like, so, oh my God. So great.
I agree with you. And I think a lot of it does come down to just, we were so far along in the NES's life cycle that developers knew how to get the most horsepower out of this console. It happens a lot in every console generation where, like, right towards the end of a console's life cycle, we start seeing games that just look phenomenal. And it's like, where was this from the beginning? And it's like, well, they didn't know how to get this out of a console
yeah.
at the beginning. But now that they do, it's kind of a shame that, like, the console's ending. And I feel like it always happens. Like Majora's Mask coming at the tail end of the N64 era, that game looks stunning compared to what we saw at the start. You know, Gex, mm-hmm. Pilot Wings, and then we come all the way, and then, oh, look at this polished game. And there's other examples, of course, but I'm just...
Oh, yeah, yeah, 100%. So as you dive deeper into the story itself, you realize that Lady Mamiya's son passed away. Mm-hmm. And that's why she's a ghost and crazy and creepy and all this kind of stuff. And it turned out that the 2-year-old son had fallen into the house furnace and was burned alive.
I just gotta say, you talked already about melting skin, dude. You talk about this. There's more we're gonna talk about. This game is not afraid to be both gross and unsettling.
Yes.
And it's going to get more unsettling when Josh tells you what Lady Mamiya did after her son burned alive.
She wanted her son to be happy. So what she did was tried to bring kids to the house and kill them so her son had kids to play with in the afterlife.
Yeah.
It's insane. My God. And I'm going to be jumping around all over the place because this game is just so incredible and insane that, like, there's a part towards the end where you pretty much have to show her son. And it's just like, this is your kid. And she's like, and that's when she, like, loses it. It's like, what? Like, you have to show her and prove to her that, like, because you're, like, collecting the pieces of the baby.
She would not like to see the baby. And... Oh my. I just have to say, yeah, it's just, it stands out because I can't think of a single game from this era that tapped into this kind of material. And so we said at the top, we were like saying, oh, like, how could this never have been re-released or released anywhere else? And I just want to get to it. I think this subject matter is why. Like, it's outright stated in kind of legacy documents that I found in my research that it never got ported to America because of concerns that the subject matter would cause controversy. So it stayed in Japan. And I mean, we didn't get the ESRB ratings kind of congressional hearings until a few years later with Mortal Kombat. But I can only imagine what Senator Joe Lieberman would have done. In this game, you must collect the body parts of a child and bring it to the ghost mother. Just disgusting in my view. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's intense. And I think when I was playing this, Josh, like that level of intensity just took me off guard because it's an NES era game. And I'm not pooping on any NES era games. There are some true masterpieces. I guess it's just like I have this little bit of an association with this era of just some more simplistic stuff. Like I always thought Metal Gear with its commentary on war and like things like that was probably the darkest I'd ever seen an NES era game go. And then, oh, we got this. We're going to get into family trauma and the death of children and horrible, disgusting ghosts. And I'm like, yeah. Wow. What about you? How was the subject matter when you first played it? Like, because you played this completely unaware.
It was a little shocking to see because, like, why can't it come to America? Why can't it come to America? You know, that's one of those things. And then you get into it and you see that the subject matter is pretty dark. And no offense, but people get offended here really easily with stupid stuff like
what?
That.
What?
Yeah, yeah, I know. That's why they had to take out all the crosses on the hospitals in Earthbound, because people would get offended that there was crosses on buildings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you talk about, you know, the subject matter to this game, and it is deep, and it is heavy, and it is great. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
It's so good. And it's good. Yeah. And, like, it's all of that in a good way.
Yeah, it's done in a way that is tense, but is also still exciting. Mm-hmm. like we said, this is an RPG game.
Yeah.
An RPG game that doesn't have grinding in it.
Mm-mm.
Like, you felt powered the entire way. You felt like you were keeping up with what was happening on the screen at all time, what was getting thrown at you.
Mm-hmm.
This game had QuickTime events.
It did. Very ahead of its time. And in many ways, I agree.
Yeah.
But speaking to that RPG element, like, absolutely. You get enemy encounters at random with, I'll be honest, some banging battle music. Like, a little bit of Precursor to Pokemon, I would imagine. Like, you get stopped in your place and you hear this bump, 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 and then it launches you right into the battle system.
Yeah.
And the battle system music rules. It's very good. But as Josh said, you scale up really efficiently to the point where, like, after a couple battles on the first floor of the mansion, if you start getting hit by wisps or worms, you can, like, take them out in, like, two hits, and it's just like, okay, move on. Like, it's a game that doesn't waste your time on the smaller battles. It's like, you're past this. Keep going. But the big ending, Josh, tell us about it. What is the kind of finale of all this drama?
You come down to the big fight with Lady Mamiya, and depending on, you know, if you survive or not, you know, you are able to leave the mansion, and the mansion kind of crumbles in on itself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, depending on how you play and who you survive with, because that's a key piece to this game. Because there's several things that we didn't talk about yet. And the number one thing that is very, very survival horror of this game is the death system. If your character dies in this game, they are dead forever.
Mm-hmm.
No Phoenix down, no revives, no nothing. If they die, they die. That means if they die and you also lose the item that they had.
Yeah.
So
if Akiko dies,
now you
no med kit, no poison healing.
Now you will be able to find alternative options throughout the game to replace that. But now your problem is not only did you lose a member of your party, but you also lost 3 item slots. That's another thing with Resident Evil, you know, the limited inventory system. I know when I played this and I beat this both times, the original time and then the time for this episode, I was able to do it and have all 5 people survive.
Wow, look at you. Oh, humble brag Josh. Keeping his friends alive.
Well, and I mean, there's a little extra ending at the end of it, which you can see over on Jaeger's Retro Review. I have the video put on there for that. Mm. So not only do you have, you know, anybody can die at any time, but you also have to split your party up. And that is huge. Next time you see that is in Resident Evil 0.
Oh, okay. That's like 2000, what, 5?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, think about that. Like, what other RPGs do you have where you have to split your team up and then you can pick and choose whatever one you want to go to and do that? Like, oh.
I can't immediately think of that. Like, the closest comparison I have is Chrono Trigger, but it's not like you're creating multiple parties. It's just like, I can have up to 3 people. I'm going to pick you two. Come with me. In this, I had like 2 units going. I had Taro, the cameraman, Emmy, the key holder, and Kazuo, the lighter guy, in one group. And then I had Akiko, the medic, and Asuka, the vacuum cleaner person, in another. And I would switch between when I needed to. And these choices ultimately affected who I was left with at the end of the game, because just for my part, I didn't finish the game with all 5 party members. I ended up being down to cameraman Taro, Emmy, and Akiko. I lost Asuka and I lost Kazuo. And as Josh mentioned, that was a big pain in the ass, because then I had to find an alternate light option because the lighter's gone. And I didn't really find the backup vacuum for or whatever it was supposed to be, but it's spreading all these extra things out across the limited inventory space, and it made me have to make some tough choices about things I was picking up or things I wasn't picking up.
Yeah, because the thing is, it's survival horror. Mm-hmm. It almost makes you question and tense that, like, oh, I can lose anybody at any time. It doesn't matter how small or how big or whatnot the enemy is. You could get cursed and then boom, be done. But one thing I loved about the battle mechanics, so say if you had 3 people fighting something, you could switch over to the other team and run and find them. So then you can add more people to that fight then. So it was great that you were able to combine everybody and combine stuff to actually give you an upper hand if you need to. But
calling in backup.
Yeah.
You're talking about horror and the permadeath system. there are a couple instances in this game where some triggered sequences can happen, and it scared the bejesus out of me because I couldn't tell if it was a death or not. Like, very early in the game, you're walking by these kind of, like, specters, like, it's almost like the souls of ghosts, and it picked up Taro and carried him out of the room, and I was like, did Taro just get killed? Is it that easy? But no, they kind of move him to the other side of the mansion, but then the challenge is walking over to get Taro again without triggering too many random encounters that knock you down. And oh my god, the wooden planks. So there are multiple instances of like, oh, the floor's out, but if you collect wood and lay it down, you can cross over. But what's the trade-off, Josh?
The planks could fall.
Mm-hmm. Now, again, first time this happened, I literally panicked. I was freaking the hell out. And you can pull your comrades
when they're
out.
Holding onto the thing. Yeah. I was going to say, when they're holding onto the side of the wall.
Now, tell me if I'm wrong, because I read this. They never will actually fall to their death. They're just kind of stuck in a permanent help me animation until you go get them. But the point is that if you don't help them, you're just down a member.
And it's one of those things, though, that it builds so much, that music, like the worrying music, builds so much tension.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you talk about the planks, you talk about, you know, being carried away. What about when you walk into some rooms and then just the floor turns to lava?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit.
Or boulders crash down from the ceiling and cut the room in half. Yeah. And then you're like, ugh. Very effective scaring moments in this game.
I love this game. I'll go on the record and say this is the best NES game made. It's an effective RPG game. It is an effective horror game. It is a game that makes you think so much outside the box that just makes you want to keep going back and figuring out different ways or different paths or different combinations of people to be able to do this. Like, we talk about horror games on the NES. You know, Castlevania we covered on this podcast, and it was we both said it was great. Wampaku Graffiti, horror game that was a little cutesy, we said that was great. Sweet Home is the pinnacle of horror on this console and the pinnacle of early 90s horror in video games. And it has gone so under the radar that, like, how is there not that much love for it? To the fact, though, that it spawned Resident Evil, which is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, horror franchise in gaming history.
I think it's just a combination of when it came out, you know, there wasn't the kind of internet as we know it today for niche communities to gather around it and bring it some attention. Like, this is a cult classic, but only a cult classic later. Like, this isn't like Metal Wolf Chaos in 2003, where it came out and was weird and the internet kind of got to find out how weird it was early, and then eventually it didn't stay just a foreign curiosity. It managed to get ported rather quickly, but this, way before consumer internet was a thing, so not so much. And also, I'm just going to say this, and this maybe is completely unfounded, but I think the fact that Resident Evil was a success kind of just made Capcom go like, well, we don't ever really have to do anything with Sweet Home ever again. It gave us Resident Evil. That's good enough. So a little bit of abandonment from its creators, if you will.
Yeah. How awesome would it be, though, to unlock this game inside of a Resident Evil game?
I think it'd be pretty neat. And there are lots of games that do that, where they'll hide either bonus games or maybe their originals within it. I just got to say, you know, before we get to the recommendation section at the end, which if you're listening, you can probably tell we're being very positive about this, but I just would really like to say, this is a game that is dying for a remake, maybe not even in a 3D sense, but just kind of like a polished pixel remaster, whatever you have you. Because here's the thing.
Think about like Octopath Traveler.
Yeah, I agree. Because this is really good. Don't get me wrong. But I think the only thing that slightly holds it back is that it's confined by the menu navigation of its time. Having to pause menu, submenu, submenu, just to get to an item. I'd say it's at its worst very early in the game when you're experimenting with what you can and can't do. And when you have to go through so much stuff just for it to be like, nothing happened. It's like, you know, so I would love this to get remade so that they can iron all that out, because everything else works so well. Yeah. That's the only hurdle it has to climb.
You have the battle mechanics to Earthbound, to Dragon Quest. Nope. Yeah. Well, Dragon Warrior
in America,
however you want to say it. Like, yeah. but it's something that has been proven to work so well. And yes, I understand that the story is a little heavy for a lot of audiences out there, but God, this game just really does need to come back or come out in some way, shape, or form.
How does the gross shit in 12 minutes get funded and a wide American release, yet this game is too controversial for American audiences? I mean, for
let's,
real.
Let's talk about Five Nights at Freddy's. A serial killer stuffing the body of children inside of animatronic bears or animatronic creatures. Yes, there's a ghost killing kids in this game, but like,
Capcom, we're ready. We are ready. We are depraved enough, and
you at least have two people to buy this game.
You will make
setup.
You will make $80 if you sell it at a $40 retro price.
So, it's down to the moment of truth. Skip, play, complete, master.
I don't really know what mastering this game entails. Maybe mastering is just getting the best ending, but this is a complete. From me, like, this is a game that I think everybody should try out to see what some of the finest capabilities of the NES were, and it's just a really intriguing and exciting game. You know, you're like, you will have a lot of fun exploring this spooky mansion, solving this mystery, and it's just good. It's just very, very good. Josh, what about you?
Master, there's so much to observe, there's so much to take into this game. And yeah, like you said, mastering is getting the best ending, completing it with all five characters alive. How strategic are you going to be when it comes to making sure that you're doing everything right in this game? And it's so great. I mean, like I said, this is the best NES game, hands down. I put this above Mario 3. I put this above Legend of Zelda, put it above Castlevania. This is a masterpiece of RPG survival horror gaming at its finest.
I would just have to do a little bit of a inside my brain tier list, but I agree that, like, it's up there. Like, this is top tier of what the NES could do. So, well, if you agree, or if you have any thoughts on Sweet Home, please be sure to, you know, drop a review or hit us up on social media and drop some comments, because this is a game we'd love to get more opinions on. We want to know what the Sweet Home community is in 2021. You know, what's your experience with it? Please get at us.
Yes. But until next time, this has been Josh.
And I'm Tom.
And we will see you in the future. While we boot up the Triflex capacitor, please take some time to subscribe to the show and leave us a review wherever you listen. This show is nothing without you, and any support helps.
If you want to connect with us and discuss the past, present, and future of gaming, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
We also have a Twitch channel where we play games for the show and for fun, so come chat with us anytime.
Thanks again for listening.
And we'll see you in the future.